Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Today is Wednesday, February 10th. We have four bills that are scheduled for work session. I am going to take the prerogative of the chair and allow for invited testimony on Senate Bill 1550 yesterday. And my haste and, let's say, frustrations, I did not give one of our witnesses the courtesy that I wanted to give to them and what I believe is appropriate. So I'm going to ask Dave Factor to please come forward. And as Dave's coming forward, I do want to apologize to him for cutting him off. I know that we were under a pressure cooker to try to get done by 10. We were after the hours. We had the president's office in here doing observations and testimony that came in before that. All of that just kind of was a perfect storm for me, and unfortunately, I allowed my emotions to get a little bit in front of what should have been right. So, Dave, I apologize to you for cutting you off, and I do want you to have an opportunity to complete your testimony, because I know it was extremely rushed yesterday.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I certainly appreciate your comments. For the record, my name is David Factor, staff counsel at the Oregon Judicial Department. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee, let me just say this about Senate Bill 1550 and about the OJD's role in this bill. We take very seriously our commitment to being neutral on policy matters. We understand and appreciate that's the province of the legislature. In regards to this bill, we're the only entity with experience related to recording proceedings similar to the grand jury proceedings that are under consideration here. And we believe we have valuable information to share regarding how to implement this policy most efficiently and in a manner consistent with the policy adopted by the legislature. Our interest, if the bill is adopted, is truly in establishing the most efficient process to administer this program and this significant new criminal justice system program. We did offer amendments to the bill as introduced, the most important of which are included in the Dash 1 amendments, and I believe now they've been included in the Dash 7 amendments, and we urge adoption of those amendments. Thank you again for the opportunity. I'll stop there and be happy to answer any questions.
So just to make certain, I did what I needed to do. My trusted vice chair didn't say I didn't, but I want to make certain that there is a work session open on Senate Bill 1550. And the comments of mine, as well as the of Dave Factor's, will be incorporated into the record for Senate Bill 1550. Any questions for Dave?
Well, could somebody clarify exactly what the concerns are that are being addressed in the Dash 1s and 7s?
Yeah.
Chair Krasonski, members of the committee, Senator Thatcher, the Dash 1s do a couple of things. They largely incorporate the underlying measure. They allow the prosecuting attorney to have access to the recording anytime after an indictment. And this is so that they can better prepare and plan if they need a protective order, so that they can have earlier access in order to determine what needs to be protected on that record. It requires them to be, the prosecuting attorney, to be very specific about what it is they want protected in the protective order. So they can't come in and say, take everything from this witness off, which leaves the court in the position to determine, well, is that from hour 3 minute one to hour 5 minute two? And it leaves some room for error there and for possible missteps on what is and what isn't released. And so we've asked the prosecuting attorney to make a request specifically to the court to tell them what it is that needs to be protected. So that was one change. It makes a few other highly technical corrections that just better implement the measure from the court's perspective. It also removes the requirement that court clerks have a background check, because they already have a background check in order to be a court clerk.
And Dave, did you have any other comments as to the question that Senator?
No, I think counsel correctly identified the issue related to the protective order proceedings, and that there be specificity in the request for what be edited from the recording.
I also remember there being a concern about the court being involved and having to well, you know, in making sure the recordings take place, did that concern get addressed, or is that going to be in a different bill someday?
Senator Thatcher, I think this is a philosophy difference that I can only relate as to what I knew that happened last session with Senate Bill 822. There was a decision that was made to put in charge of the grand jury proceedings and being responsible for the oversight, seeing, and the collection and the storing of the records with the court. There is, I think, other models that where the district attorney's offices, not in this state, but in other states, are in fact the controlling factor agency within this process, and it would be within their office. They would have, I mean, today you don't have the court engaged on the day-to-day operation of the grand jury. What happens, and maybe this has changed in the 20 since the 20 years that I've done a grand jury, but basically the jurors are sworn in by the court, and then once they're sworn in, they're turned over to the district attorney for his or her use in their processing of cases. Remember that in Oregon you have two ways of getting an indictment. One is the grand jury process, which is probably 99.9% of the cases in Oregon go through a grand jury proceeding as compared to a preliminary hearing. The prelims are something that is a court function. It's just like having a mini trial, basically, with people being exposed to cross-examination, etc. Open, transparent process. The grand jury proceeding isn't that. And so that there is the differences there, and there's still discussion even now as to whether the obligation should rest in the court with the cost that it would take for the court to actually be up and running and providing the the employees that it would be necessary as clerks, as well as the storage and making copies and doing the administrative part, as compared to, you know, the district attorney's office doing that. You know, this is the part that for some people it's hard to understand, only because you're just not familiar with it. When there is a discovery request, that meaning that the individual that's charged or their representative, meaning a defense attorney, they make that demand from the district attorney's office. And the district attorney has the duty, or the city prosecutor's office has the duty of providing whatever evidence we have to them. And so some people would say, well, this would be part of that, in the sense that the grand jury record should be part of that. Right now, we're going down a track that says we're going to have that as an obligation of the court versus a extension of what the district attorney's already doing. So that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, it's, I'll be very frank with you, when it gets down to Ways and Means, I think they're going to be pushing the numbers in the sense of right, getting the pencil sharpened and figuring out. And if the bill's going to continue to go forward this session, like it was going to in 2015, we could see some other changes potentially being made.
Mr. Chair, if I could, part of the discussion was that if there's dispute between the defense attorney and the prosecutor as to what should be released, that ends up in the court anyway. And so kind of the theory was that let's put it in a protected place that is not a biased place, because for a lot of it, the court's going to have to make that decision anyway, where there is a disagreement. Where there's not a disagreement, it can happen relatively simply. I do understand the expense part of it, but I think we're also looking at making sure we have a true recording, and to have that, you kind of have to have somebody in the room that's got the headphones on, make sure that the equipment's working and things like that. So it will be an interesting discussion in Ways and Means, but I was kind of sold on this concept just to make sure everything was true and accurate and unbiased.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it, is to trying to ensure that we have checks and balances in place, but also realize, you know, in my day job, I have an obligation to make available a discovery to a defendant or a defense mm-hmm. attorney. And if I'm not doing it, then there are mechanisms such as motion to compel where that goes to the judge. And then the judge is going to, he or she's going to make a decision based on whatever is presented to him at a hearing. And so that's another concept that could, in fact, be used in this scenario. But at this point, the policy that's moving forward is one that, as Senator Cruz has said, one that gives at least the perception of, and also does set up kind of sideboards and not sideboards, that's probably not the press word, objective view and a agent who is not in the middle of representing the state in a adversarial process against a an accused. And that's where I think that balance has come at this point. I was not part of those discussions last session. And basically, we started off this session with the understanding that we could have pretty much anything we wanted in the sense of going forward, but was chosen to start with where the discussions ended in 2015, which was the Dash 5s.
Right.
So that was the marker that we used, and we've made some changes since then by hearing concerns from ODAA, concerns that came up from the CLA, and then I think the legislature and our legislative branch of the of government chose to do the best we could for what we thought was the most appropriate for transparency, accountability, and
fairness.
Fairness is a good word. So.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I thank you for the explanations. And since you are familiar with the process, maybe you could explain to me what would happen if accidentally the wrong tape or recording was given to or released, I guess that's the term used, that doesn't have a redaction of the protected order. What is the recourse at that point? What happens?
Okay, so let me make sure before trying to answer that is if you have a situation presented to the grand jury, it's recorded, and then there is a request for those tapes to be made available to the state and to the defense. If there was a protective order sought and was received that required certain information to be redacted, and if it wasn't, then that would be a matter that would have to be brought back before the court, and the court would determine what, if any, sanctions would be appropriate. What I would assume that the officers of the court, meaning the district attorney or assistant district attorney, and that the criminal defense lawyer, if they received a tape that had not been properly redacted, that they would have a duty to go to the court and bring this issue to the court, and that they would take they would be under the protective order requirements and to not release. In other words, just because they got it when they weren't supposed to get it, that doesn't mean they get to use it. That basically says that because the court's ordered this protective order, and if there's been a human error of not redacting a certain part out, I would expect both attorneys as officers of the court to be reporting that to the court and at the same time to not infringe or violate the court, the protective order. If you actually had, you know, those scenarios play out where someone actually purposely violated the order, I would not want to be that individual standing in front of the judge that's going to be potentially giving sanctions because I would think that that would be a complete breach of their ethical duty. I think you'd see potentially not only sanctions by the court, but you would see the situation of it being reported to the state bar for ethical violations. So, you know.
If I could tag on to that as well, Senator and Senator Thatcher, this does limit the release to the defense attorney, and it prohibits a copy going to the defendant.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So the defendant themselves should never get a copy, period. So no matter if there's a violation of the protective order as to failure to properly redact or not, that would be a situation, again, I would not want to be that attorney that basically handed to or provided to the defendant something that is under state law is prohibited.
Any other questions?
Yes. Probably, but I'll save them.
Well, if you got more, I mean, we got the time. This is a work session.
So it's being released to the defense attorney. What if that defense attorney decided to go to the newspapers with it? Is that allowed?
No.
Okay.
No, they can't. In fact, the bill also says that they can't copy and transmit. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what the phrase that's used, but
I think it's copy, reproduce, disseminate.
Yeah, disseminate would be the part.
Okay.
You know, if they don't want to be a lawyer anymore, I guess they could do that. But that would probably be grounds for disbarment.
That would be potentially checking in your mail ticket.
Yeah.
All right, any other questions for Dave Factor or any questions regarding the state of where we're at right now? All right, with that, Dave, thank you very much. And again,
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we do have a work session at this point, and so the chair would be willing to take it.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the -7 amendment into House Bill 1550.
Senator Cruz moves that we adopt and amend the -7s into Senate Bill 1550. Discussion on the a motion to amend. Any objection to the motion? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 1550 as amended by the -7s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that the bill go to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz now moves Senate Bill 1550 as amended by the -7s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and also request that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means based on subsequent referral prior reference. Any discussion on the motion? Senator Gelser first.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be voting in support of the motion. I do believe that this is good policy. I have been grateful to my two local district attorneys for very good conversations that we've had, and I know we're not on exactly the same page about it. And I just wanted to put on the record that I'm supporting this motion because I believe recordation is a good policy. It is not because I have any doubt in the integrity of either of my DAs or DAs in the state of Oregon as a whole. I think we are fortunate to have public servants that look out for the cause of justice in the state. I believe this will contribute to it, but I would not want any of the discussion we've had in this hearing room to suggest otherwise.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could, just to follow up on Senator Gelser, this isn't pointing a finger at anybody. This is just looking at a more proper way to do business. That's it.
Senator Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate all the work that I know has gone into this. But I haven't been on the front rows, and this may be the best policy. This may be, like, becoming a model policy for the rest of the United States. I don't know. But I'm not there yet, and so I just wanted to say that on the record. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Any other comments? I am going to, I guess, follow up as the chair. This is something I think is important for transparency and accountability in our system. I've been fortunate to be able to serve as a prosecutor both at the state level through as an assistant district attorney as well as a municipal prosecutor prior to that time as well as since then. So about 28 years plus, if I remember correctly. And I do believe that this is an appropriate step to ensure that we have the proper checks and balances. What we want, I believe, is justice to be served and hold those individuals accountable for the conduct. But we also need to make certain that everyone has a opportunity to know what is said in a grand jury as to whether people's testimony changes. I think the transparency is very important and that we need to be able to go forward. I will reference John Homo, who is the district attorney out of Deschutes, and I know that he's taken a position that's not necessarily favored by many those within the ODAA. But I do believe his letter that was submitted, that it was at least on the desk from Senator Boquist, does reflect that it's not to say anyone can't be trusted. It's just that our system requires checks and balances. And don't have the exact number, but I do know that, you know, the recording of grand juries is not unique. And for me, I feel that it's important for us to ensure for Oregonians that we have a system that is has the accountability. It's not one that we're going to allow direct attacks on the indictments. But what we are going to do is if you do, in fact, have individuals who are changing their statements, their positions, their testimony from giving a statement to a field officer, a detective, then potentially changing it at the time of a of grand jury or changing it after grand jury to a trial setting. Those are important for us to move forward and allow for the jurors to be able to take those things in consideration. Now, there have been others concerns that I know that have been raised. I believe that by placing into the bill and ensuring that in this process, hearsay is allowed in grand juries, and this is any and all appropriate and proper hearsay that would be admissible in a court is allowed. And so if you do have an individual who has made a statement that seems to be recanting it, that testimony can in fact come in, I think, personally on the front end of a officer's testimony as to what was told to them in the field, or if necessary to come back after there's been a change in the testimony at the grand jury for them to put in perspective for the jurors to understand what has been out there and what has been reported. So with that, let me just see if there's any other comments. If not, do we have any objections to the motion, which again is to move Senate Bill 1550 as amended with the dash sevens to the floor with the due pass recommendation with a request for subsequent referral to Ways and Means? Senator Thatcher is opposing. Is there anyone else? Motion carries. And at this point, we don't need to put a carrier because it's going down to Ways and Means. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1550. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 1553. And let's see, I think that is...
Chair Przonski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1553 is your related to crime bill. We have a number of amendments here for you today. The dash ones, I'm just going to go through them for you real quick. The dash ones add to existing public records exemptions under 192.502. It prohibits disclosure of images of death as part of a law enforcement investigation if release of those images would constitute an unreasonable invasion of privacy of the deceased person's family. It does allow disclosure if it's shown by clear and convincing evidence that the public interest requires such disclosure. The proposed Dash 2 amendments limit the Assault 3 provisions to those who are vulnerable road users. It's pedestrians, highway workers, people riding animals, and those on bicycles, scooters, roller skates, etc. The proposed Dash 5 amendments are a cleanup to SB 908 from our last session, and it clarifies that any misdemeanor Class C felony or felony punishable as a misdemeanor is eligible for set-aside. And the proposed Dash 9 amendments are a combined amendment that takes care of some of the cleanup on the statute of limitations portion of this measure. It refines a substantially similar crime to apply to two reported crimes that could be charged in the same charging instrument. It clarifies that the statement made by a victim to another person should be in temporal proximity rather than contemporaneous. And it clarifies that a confession by a defendant must be in relation to the crime reported by the victim. These are all ready to go today.
All right. So, Chair will take motions on each of the proposed amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 1553.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 1553. Any discussion on the Dash 1s? Any objections to the Dash 1s? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment into Senate Bill 1553.
Senator Cruz now moves the Dash 2 amendment into Senate Bill 1553. Discussion? Senator Thatcher.
I still strenuously object to creating a felony. Okay. So I'm not going to be supporting this.
All right. Any other comments? Objections to the dash twos? Senator Thatcher is a no. Is there anyone else who's opposing the dash twos? Not seeing that, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash five amendment and Senate Bill 1553.
Senator Cruz now moves the dash five amendment into Senate Bill 1553. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash nine amendment into Senate Bill 1553.
Senator Cruz now moves the dash nine amendment into Senate Bill 1553. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1553 as amended by the dash one, dash two, dash five, and dash nine amendments to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1553 as amended by the dash ones, the dash twos, the dash fives, and the dash nines to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. All right, Senator Cruz first and then Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, there were the dash 10 amendments which would have dealt with some of the concerns we have on that part of it. My hope is that when this bill does get to the House, they will take a look at that and see if maybe we need to step that down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Senator Thatcher?
Well, as I stated, I think, our first committee meeting, I was part of the work group on the statute of limitations, and I'm glad that we had that. We worked hard. There was a lot of contention at times. However, I think we ended up with a pretty good product. I wish it would have been able to stand alone and that we would not have loaded it with this other Assault 3 thing that is not related to it at all. And I think it'll capture a lot of people, potentially. And I'm loath to say I will be opposed to this bill as it stands right now.
Okay. I appreciate that. Other comments? So I do want to put on the record, I understand that there was a dash 10 that would basically move this portion of the bill into the misdemeanor level of an assault 4. when you look at the statute for assault 163.160, we do have in that scenario where criminal negligence is allowed to be the mental element or but it's very limited in the sense of where there's been a firearm used in the commission of the assault. We also do have enhanced penalties under the Assault 4 that ratcheted up to a Class C felony when you have certain situations that occur, such as an assault in the fourth degree that occurs in front of a minor child or other minors within the household. As well as if the victim of a assault 4 is unfortunately a repeat victim by the same assailant, those enhances it. So I guess what I would say, it's not unheard of in the state to have that type of conduct that is a assault in the fourth degree as a felony based on what we've already carved out. I do believe that there's a lot of safeguards in the scenario that we've heard, reflecting back on the testimony that we heard on this portion of the bill as to it being an assault in the third degree. It does require, as criminal negligence is defined, a extreme high threshold for it to reach that threshold as compared to being simple negligence as you would have in a civil means or something that's not to the standard and requirement. And also the other part to that is not just only does it have to be meet the threshold of the mental element, you also have to have with that the result of substantial physical injury that's above and beyond what is required in a straight assault 4 degree, which is just a simple physical injury. So with that, I am comfortable with this moving forward. I understand for Senator Thatcher having multiple topics within an omnibus bill, but with a, I'm not going to say with a short session only, because it clearly we have used this process in trying to capture stuff that needs to be addressed, or the policy is wanting to be addressed. And with this, we have, I believe, four different components that we're addressing. And I appreciate that you may support three of the four, and then may be that your opposition to that one may not allow you to support the others. I appreciate that, and I sure will. I'm assuming that you'll, when you make your decision of what you'll do on the floor, you'll document it with your statements on the floor, or with a vote explanation. Other comments? All right. Besides Senator Thatcher opposing the motion that's before us, again, is there anyone else? Not so ordered. And this one will be going to the floor, and it's compared to going to Ways and Means, and the chair will carry 1553. We'll close the work session on 1553, open the work session on 1555. And
okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment into Senate Bill 1555.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment into Senate Bill 1555. Discussion. Does anyone want?
This is just a clarification. So.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. As a little reminder, Senate Bill 1555, under current law, let me back up, under current law, there is a prohibition against the use of polygraphs in screening applicants. Senate Bill 1555 would amend this law to allow for polygraph examinations as a condition for employment of law enforcement officers. There is also, as mentioned, the Dash 1 amendment, and this amendment adds an additional requirement that the use of polygraphs in testing applicants for law enforcement positions is subject to an applicable collective bargaining agreement. And we have also received in that there is no revenue or fiscal impact to this matter.
All right. Discussion regarding the dash ones. All right. So I guess all I will say on this is that I believe the dash ones are appropriate, because it does, in fact, allow for local communities to have a little bit more local control over whether or not that's going to be used. I will tell you, as you've heard the testimony that came out of Eugene Police Department through Chief Kearns, they feel that it's appropriate and necessary, for they can ensure that people who are being candidates and hired are, in fact, being able to have a full, complete background check, and ensuring that they actually have all the tools that are necessary to do those type of screenings. Now, one of the things I believe that came out through the testimony this time, if not the previous, is, in fact, that many candidates, when faced with the knowledge that they're going to have to go through that process, will will take themselves out of the position of running, because they know that they have something in their past. And so that has been, I think, part of the process, that it does, in fact, allow for individuals to be able to choose. And knowing that we have at this point the states to our north and to our south that are using this process, that has been shown that you could, in fact, get individuals applying in our state where we do not have this requirement. But I do again agree that this needs to be on a local-based decision, and if the rank and file of an agency believes that it's appropriate and they have agreed to it within their collective bargaining, then the community will be able to do it. If not, then they will still be using whatever means they have now. Any other comments on the
morning? Mr. Chair, especially when you get down to a lot of the smaller communities where you might have a chief of police and one deputy, it's a different dynamic. And so allowing them the option, I think, is totally appropriate.
All right.
Right. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Thatcher.
There was some concern expressed by some that these tests may potentially replace investigatory work simply because it's less expensive. Now, would Would this still allow local jurisdictions to make a choice as to how they're going to screen their candidates completely, or would it just add this to what they normally do?
Well, this is a tool that can be used in that process of evaluating a candidate as to whether or not they want to hire them. I would say that any agency that does not continue to do the full background check or what they're doing now is presenting themselves with a very libelous situation. As you can imagine, that when you have a bad apple act out and do some of the horrendous stuff that's happened in some of these situations, multiple rapes of individuals, the city or the hiring agents, governmental unit is potentially on the hook for not doing due diligence in hiring that person. And so I heard that too, but I would be appalled to think that someone's going to try to cut corners and to say just because of the polygraph, we're not going to do other background, because that would be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, everyone I've talked to on this, this is a tool in addition to everything that currently exists, and everything that currently exists will still exist.
And still be used.
Yes, yes.
All right, any other questions? All right, any objections to the adoption of the Dash Ones into Senate Bill 1555? Not seeing any, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 1555, as amended by the Dash Ones, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves the Senate Bill 1555, as amended by the Dash Ones, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? Not seeing any, so ordered. And the chair will also carry Senate Bill 1555 to the floor. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1555, open up a work session on Senate Bill 1571.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. This is Senate Bill 1571. As a reminder, this bill addresses the concern over the number of untested sexual assault forensic evidence kits in Oregon. This measure would require the Department of State Police to adopt rules for processing and testing these kits, and it would also require every law enforcement agency to develop written policies and procedures regarding the retention, testing, and destruction of the kits. And it also creates a task force on the testing of sexual assault forensic evidence kits. We have the Dash 3 and a Dash 5 amendment before you for consideration. Everything contained in the Dash 3 amendment is also contained in the Dash 5 amendment. These amendments further define victim, who a victim can contact for information regarding the kit, that a victim can receive or ask for all information pertaining to the kit, and that a response must be given within 30 days of the inquiry. It also requires all law enforcement agencies to provide their written policies to the public as soon as possible upon request. It clarifies the time frames for obtaining the kit from the hospital. And finally, it modifies who will serve on the task force and adds additional responsibilities to the task force. Additionally, the Dash 5 amendment clarifies the definition of law enforcement and who the victim will contact for information on the safe kit. It requires the department to report on the progress of entering these kits into the CODIS system by July 1st, 2019. And finally, it adds a provision allowing a victim to reclassify their kit from anonymous to non-anonymous or from non-anonymous to anonymous.
Thank you. questions regarding the explanation we have? So with that, we'll take a motion on the Dash 5.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment into Senate Bill 1571.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 5 amendment into Senate Bill 1571. Again, discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to put into the record the discussion we had about immediately and as soon as practicable, and the report back to the legislature on January 1st of 2019. The intent is that as soon as practicable doesn't mean years. It really means as soon as practicable, not immediately as in the day that the tests come back, but certainly not a year later within a matter of weeks or months.
Right. And I guess I was just going to say some of the terms needed to be modified so it wasn't an absolute to the point of having these type of evidence taking priority over other evidence that's being processed. We are going to be working through this endeavor to address all of the backlog that we have. And at the same time, unfortunately, we're going to have new victims, new crimes, not only in the arena of sexual assaults, but other very horrendous person crimes that do, in fact, require resources from the state police labs to be acting on. So clearly our intent is not to have this stuff being waysided. We also understand that it is in, it's to everyone's best interest to get the stuff coded that can actually be put into the system on a CODIS that meets that eligibility as soon as possible because of the positive impact it can have in helping resolve cases that could be, unfortunately, based on a serial rapist type of a scenario. So we have had conversations with the state police forensics. They fully appreciate and understand that this is give the flexibility to maintain prioritization of whatever might be coming down their pike. But at the same time, I'm committed. I know Senator Gelser's committed, and I believe many other people in this process are committed to ensuring the resources are there to take care of the needs of the forensic labs. And I know that Senator Cruz has been one that has been very active in trying to help, I'm going to say, decentralize, allowing for more regionalization of the labs so we can hopefully have the ability to have better, quicker turnaround and accessibility for lab techs to be able to be in these various parts of the state in a more timely manner than we are seeing at this point. So, any other comments? Senator Thatcher.
Yes, I want to thank Senator Gelser for providing the vehicle and working hard on this and getting us here. And if we were going to combine concepts, I would rather have seen the statute of limitations in this bill. It would have made more sense. At least there was a nexus between the two, but you know my feelings. So anyway, I just want to say thank you, and I fully support this.
I will tell you that there were those discussions, and there was a decision that was made by those involved in that decision-making that they wanted this to stand alone by itself. And so I agreed and thought that was appropriate. One of the things we wanted to ensure is that it really had its own independence as to the showing the seriousness and significance of the legislature understanding the issue we have and the need to address it, and so it was kept that way. I will also was going to wait until we got through the adoption of this, but I'll go ahead and just do it now so we won't have to belabor the points. I also want to thank Senator Gelser for her willingness to use a personal bill, and also to the advocates, including Brenda Tracy, that brought this forward for us to consider. You know, this is a scenario that we all want to have things done right. We want to put in a process that does not only capture and the backlog and deal with that, but also looking in the future to ensure we don't have another backlog occur. And so, and I also thought that it was very appropriate to use a Senate personal bill for this because it does, in fact, allow for all of the members who want to be not only sponsors but co-chief sponsors under our rules to be able to do that. And so, again, thank you very much. Any other comments? Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since everyone's using this opportunity to comment, I also want to thank the chair and especially thank Senator Gelser for taking this issue on. This is a huge problem, not just in Oregon, but nationally, and it seems like this is a great first step that we can take to address the backlog. We shouldn't have victims of sexual assault having to be re-victimized by not having prosecutions that can go through or having multiple victims and never having those links in cases made. So I think this will start to address this problem in Oregon and hopefully become a model for the country. So yeah. I'm very proud to be able to support it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're in the thank yous, I really wanted to thank the chair for your guidance and support of moving this forward. Obviously, the advocates and Chana, who really kept all of the trains moving, got all of the voices in there, and made sure that the bill says what it needs to say. So I think we often don't see all of the work that staff puts in behind the scenes, and it is enormous. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and I think just as, with the to say kumbaya that we're doing in recognitions for people, I think it is very important to also thank Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. She is the individual that brought the original bill in 2015 calling for an accountability on the rape kits. She was gracious enough to allow the chair to use a work group process instead of legislating that. I felt that it was more appropriate to allow those who are on the front lines, and specifically the state police, who oversees all of the kits for processing, to take the lead, because they wanted to do that, and they did. I believe they did an excellent job of getting a response from all the various law enforcement agencies in this state, and getting the numbers so we knew what we were dealing with. And I know that they are totally committed to moving forward. So my thanks also goes to the law enforcement community, and specifically to Superintendent Evans, because of the work that he ensured was being done and was timely done, so we could actually have the time for our work group to do our work. So thank you to those at the agency. Any other thank yous, comments, or statements? All right, not seeing any objection to the motion that we have before us. And just as a reminder, that is the adoption of the Dash 5 amendments in the Senate Bill 1571. Not seeing any objections, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1571 as amended by the Dash 5 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and request the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1571 as amended by the Dash 5s to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and also requests that the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee based on subsequent referral. Any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, what I'm concerned about right now is how are we going to make this stretch out for another 35 minutes so the president's office will be up here staring at you.
We can go in recess, and we can come back at 9:58 and see if anyone shows up.
Or we could just finish.
All right, any other? We got some
motion.
Thumbs coming up. Okay, it looks like we got a pre-vote. That's a separate motion. So any objection to the motion that we have before us? Not seeing any, so ordered. And as much as I would say, Senator Gelser, I'd like to assign you as to be the carrier. I assume you will be if the bill is when it comes out of Ways and Means.
Thank you.
But it will be going to Ways and Means. And so we close the work session on Senate Bill 1571. Chana, what else do we need to do regarding our obligations for Senate bills?
Chair Pabonski, members of the committee, we are done with our Senate bills.
All right. With that said, I want to thank the committee for all the indulgences. I know that we did run over sometimes over 10, but I would also say that we had some flexibility for members not needing to be here at 0800 to allow for those transitions to occur. And I also will note to the president's office, who's probably monitoring us as we speak. It's now 9:27 on Wednesday. We will be adjourning now, and we have completed the work that we need to do for Senate bills. And so we will not be meeting tomorrow. With that, we're adjourned. And Friday, we're adjourned. We're adjourned. And Friday, we're adjourned.